You know, I asked a professor once, I said, what was his, what was the difference between today's generation and the generation he grew up in as a youngster? And he, it was a very interesting response. He said, today's generation, the methods are far superior. But in his generation, technique and presentation was far superior.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we will begin part one with my week at the Magic Castle here in 2015, and we will hear several stories from Howard Hamburg and Newell Unfred, and they have just a ton of really interesting stories. I hope that you stick with them, because this was recorded live at the Magic Castle, and unfortunately, of course, as you know, if you've been to the Magic Castle, there's a lot of back noise and bar talk and a lot of people shuffling around, so hopefully that's not going to cause too much of a disturbance, because the material that they talk about and the things that were some advice from the professor and Larry Jennings and others, priceless, really great. Later we go on down to the library, where it's a little bit quieter, and I get a chance to talk with Bill Goodwin, who was the last year's Close-Up Magician of the Year, as well as the librarian for the Magic Castle. And so we have a lot of interesting things we talk about there. And that kind of wraps us up for this first hour in part one, and I really haven't even begun my week yet, because tomorrow will be Saturday, and then we'll be going into the swap meet that they got going on. I'm sure there'll be some fun people and interesting folks we can talk to over there. So, let's get ready to go to California and visit the Magic Castle. Thanks for listening to The Magic Word.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is almost high noon here in Houston, and I'm awaiting my flight for Southwest Airlines. Got my cup of Dunkin' Donuts hazelnut coffee, and already had a muffin, and getting ready to go. So we're going to begin my trip right now, going to Los Angeles, and going to stay for a couple of days in the L.A. area, there at the Hanan Gardens next to the Magic Castle, or right next to the Magic Hotel, I guess, which is, anyway, you get the idea. And then going to be there for a couple days before I begin working in the close-up gallery, and then move over to the Nirvana Hotel over there, and then be performing in the close-up room, as I said, and hopefully get to chat with a bunch of interesting folks along the way. Now, the reason I'm going in a little bit early than right now, because today, again, is Friday, that tomorrow, Saturday, is going to be the annual, I believe it's an annual, swap meet at the Magic Castle. It's been many years since I've last been there, but I'll never forget it was such a wonderful time that we had before, because there were so many people that I got to chat with that were that I hadn't met before, and a lot of people, I think, turn out for the swap meet who don't go to the castle on a regular basis, or I may not otherwise see, so I may have a chance to pull them aside and chat for a while. Once I arrive, my good friend Nelson Fu will be picking me up. He's also picking up Shoot Ogawa, who's coming in from South Korea, and then Nelson's going to have a table at the swap meet tomorrow, and so he has allowed me to put a few of my things onto his table, see if I can move a few things out. So hopefully it won't be an even swap. I'd like to move some things out rather than bringing some things back home. At least that's what my wife always says. I'm sure you've got a similar situation. Too much stuff. Anyhow, the it's interesting because my bag was about 4 pounds overweight, so I had to transfer from one bag over to the other one, or they're going to charge me $75, which was fine. Transferred it over and actually came in then right at 49.5 pounds, so I was right under by a half pound, and the other suitcase came in at about 45 pounds, so that's why I said I got a lot of stuff that I'm taking, so I need to come back a little bit lighter, certainly, and that's in addition to the backpack that I'm carrying then right now. Good exercise. So, a lot of good things looking forward to doing and seeing, which includes going to Pink's, famous hot dog place, as well as, of course, my usual In-N-Out Burger, which is just down the street from the Nirvana in Magic Castle, and then also to Cone's Deli, which is a famous place. Always a lot of fun. Anyhow, looking forward to it. Should be great. Come along for the ride. Hope you enjoy it. So, I'll see you in California. This is Scotty out. Hello, listeners of the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty here, and we have arrived in L.A. Good news and bad news. Bad news is my screen on my laptop is cracked, so darn. I can't work on my computer and edit some of these podcasts and get this all put together. I had a lot of plans for some things to do, but going to have to see what I can do as far as a workaround goes on that. I guess I can plug into another monitor on my TV or something. Well, anyhow, that's kind of a bummer. I'm going to end up having to get a new laptop to do my podcast, but not a big issue. That I appreciate those people who have been sponsoring the podcast, because you know, I can use that money to buy a new laptop, or at least go towards buying that. Anyhow, bad news, I got here and realized I had forgot my slacks, so I had to go out and buy another pair of pants. My wife thought it'd be funny perhaps if I perform without any pants. That certainly would cause a little uproar. I would think that would not the kind of magic I think that the Magic Castle patrons would want to see. So that's kind of the bummer news that I've got. On the bright side, hey, I'm at In-N-Out Burger just down the street here. As I was walking from the Highland Gardens over here, I ran into Bill Goodwin, who is the librarian. He was just heading over to work, chatted with him for just a little bit, didn't have a chance to turn on the microphone. And then walking out of the Nirvana apartment complex was Doc Eason. He's going to be working the W.C. Fields Bar. So I chatted with him a little bit then briefly as well. So hopefully over the next couple days I'll be able to sit down with him just to talk for a little bit to say hi. So you guys can all hear his voice then too, rather than just mine all the time. All righty. Well, I'm waiting for my number 87 to be called here. And by the way, if you get a chance ever to try an In-N-Out Burger, you got to have the double-double. Their fries are wonderful also. So until a little bit later, this is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I am here on the first night, or Friday night, before I begin next week at the Magic Castle, and here with Howard Hamburg. Hey, Howard.
How are you, everybody?
And Newell. Hey, Newell.
Newell, how you doing?
And Newell's getting ready to tell us a story, by the way, about Banachek, by the way. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, when I first started out, I was CEO of a pretty large company, and I'd hired a magician for trade shows. And the name of the magician was Danny Orleans.
Yeah.
Okay? And Danny was just terrific. And he did this trick with the watch. The watch trick. Psychokinetic time, which I later understood what the trick was. And I'd watch this thing for months, repeat after, and I couldn't understand what was going on. I said, Danny, you got to teach me this trick. And he goes, well, that's a really good trick. Let me show you this card thing.
Yeah.
Now, this went on for 3 years.
Yeah.
And finally, I said, Danny, I want to know how to do this particular effect. He said, what you need to do is get a pamphlet from Banachek. It's called Psychokinetic, and I ordered it.
Yeah.
I have been doing that trick ever since. It's my secret weapon that I've used over the years, and I have some work on it. It's a little different than the way that it's in the pamphlet, but it's a wonderful, wonderful effect.
It is, you know, and an interesting kind of follow-up on that story is that when we put out that book to begin with, and that was the first staple-bound book, I think we had had his pre-thoughts and Psychokinetic Touches that was spiral-bound to begin with, and then we came out with that one that was stapled, and it sat on the shelf for a long time, couldn't get stores to buy. We probably sold 25 the first year and 30 the next year, and it was because that Danny Orleans and a couple of the trade show guys were doing it, but they weren't really sharing it with everybody, but people like you, the Newell, were seeing this, and before long, he was telling people, and all of a sudden, boom, like the next year, we sold like 1,000. I mean, it just—it was because of the guys who were actually doing it, and it's just, you know how solid it is.
And the material was so well written. I mean, I've seen some other people do it, and they sort of try and shortchange the thing. I mean,
there's a lot of subtlety.
You really need to do exactly the way things are written in that pamphlet, and but I did come up with some subtleties. I don't think I ever shared them with. I don't know Mr. Banachek. I've had some stuff published with Kenton Knepper, and I think Kenton talk to Scott about it, but we didn't want to put it out because I have to use the same method for moving the watch.
Right.
And so that would be, that's not correct. So I never did put the thing out.
Yeah.
But I'd be off this, I'd be pleased to share with you what
A little bit later after we turn this off, we can fiddle around with that a little bit. I'll be glad to show him when I get back together with him.
You know? Yeah, it's very, very interesting. There's a lot of things that you can do with it, but that's a reputation maker.
Yeah.
I will tell you, there's one time I did do it, and I flicked the stem, I guess I can say that, and it was a Rolex.
Yeah.
And you had to untwist it.
That's hard to get, yeah.
When I pulled the stem out, the stem broke.
I've heard stories like that from others.
It actually did. And
It comes right out.
I replaced it because it was my responsibility because I was doing the trick. And I'm like, oh, smoke, what do I do now with this thing? But it's a miracle. How can you name a number and it's at that number while the watch is still in somebody else's hand?
In their hand, right. Yeah.
And so, because a lot of guys would use, at the time, there was all that collector's workshop. That was that electronic one, which sometimes it'd work and sometimes it wouldn't work.
Right.
Because they had the wires in it were so thin they'd break, you know?
Right.
And then other people, I think the group Vernet, somebody down in South America made one that was a lot cheaper and they had several varieties. And when I was at Hollywood Magic, we used to sell an awful lot of those too. But nothing can replace borrowing somebody else's watch and doing that effect.
I often will use a master's time machine, and so this way that, you know, they just name an hour, someone names a minute, and it changes to that time. And that's a good follow-up because they say, well, let me use your watch. Because if they think, well, there's something funny about the watch, well, maybe just use yours. And then it completely blows it away.
I've got some other stuff. I have a bunch of Stull watches.
Sure.
So I can do some follow-up stuff regarding time. But if you're doing walk around, you don't want to carry all that stuff with you. You just see your watch. You
right.
know? And that's
perfect fun. Impromptu kind of a thing.
I mean, it's a great thing to know.
Yeah. And Howard, we were just talking before I turned on the microphone here about your lecture, and one of the things that you specialize in your lecture that differs from others is that you talk about the history of magic and your link to the past, if you will. We're sitting right here under a picture of Di Vernon here at the castle, and have you got a couple of great stories you can kind of share that...
As far as the history is concerned, it's not a lecture based on history, but it's based on my relationship and experiences with these greats who were history, such as Di, Vernon, Jimmy, Grippo, and Michael Skinner, and Francis Carlisle, and so forth. Yeah, I'll tell you an interesting story that involved Larry Jennings.
Okay.
Well, the original corner was not where we are presently sitting. Yep. It's over there.
Right.
And at the time, people lined up for the close-up around that pillar behind the settee that the professor sat at.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting on a chair near the table, because he didn't sit in the settee, was Larry Jennings, had a beer in his hand, which is not unusual.
Yeah.
And Charlie Miller, myself, and the professor. And the professor was engaged in a conversation with three women, and he asked me if I wouldn't mind doing something for them while they were waiting in line.
Yeah.
And so select a card, and you select a card. What was the name of yours? And I reached into my pocket and produced it. And I said to the second woman, what was yours? As I cupped my hands like I'm holding the deck. Mm-hmm. Hidden between the two hands, and she said, the card. And I said, don't take your eyes off the deck, and I lifted my hand, and the deck was gone. And
just her card.
It was her card. I love the effect.
Yeah.
Well, they were shocked. They loved it. The professor thanked me. I sat down, and Larry said, that was the worst thing I ever saw. He said, you should have done a top cover pass. And he said a few other little things that I don't want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And Charlie says, you know, Larry, Howard's a friend of ours. You don't demean him like that in front of his friends. If you have something to show him constructively, we'll do that. But don't embarrass him like that. I'll show him. So he got up, and he was standing 3 feet away from us with his back to us.
Okay.
Doing the same effect for these women.
that you had just done?
That I had just done.
For the same group of ladies?
The same girls.
Okay.
And Di, who was the biggest troublemaker in this place, said to me, "That's terrible what he just did to you. So embarrassing to say things like that in front of us. He's using redback riders just like you have. Maybe you can think of something." And I stood up within a second, and I'm 2 feet behind Jennings, yeah, whose back is to me. When Larry swung the deck into his jacket pocket, mm-hmm, I took my cards and I threw them between his legs. There are cards all over the floor in front of him.
Okay.
He thinks he missed his pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes stepping all over him, and he goes up the stairs, and you can hear him, "I don't need this damn crap," and all, whatever it was. And I love Larry. Larry and I got along.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went back, and the professor was laughing, and the professor says, "I suggest you go home, because he's going to really be pissed when he finds a deck in his pocket." If you have time, I'll share an interesting story that has to do with his thinking, and I'm referring to the professor. Michael Skinner and Larry Jennings and myself and Ray Grismer and the professor were sitting in the corner having our normal conversations. And Larry asked the professor, what did he consider more important, the beginning, the middle, or the end? And the professor thought for a second, and he said, "You can't have a strong ending without a strong middle. And you can't have a strong middle without a strong beginning." He said, "The beginning," and I remember these words like today, I mean, as if it was today, "the beginning is the foundation, the middle is the framework, and the end is the finished effect. However, if all three of those elements were done absolutely flawlessly, the beginning, the middle, and the end, there's something more important than those three elements combined." Well, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I want you all to remember this. It's the moment. That's what they remember. That's what they take home with them. They don't remember the beginning, the middle, or the end. They remember that moment." And he lifted his Johnny Walker Red in one hand and a cigar in the other, and he held up his drink and he said, "Max Mellini taught me that."
So that's the importance of handing down from one generation to the next.
Oh, absolutely.
Like that,
you know, I asked a professor once, I said, what was the difference between today's generation and the generation he grew up in as a youngster? And it was a very interesting response. He said, "Today's generation, the methods are far superior. But in his generation, technique and presentation was far superior." The stories of and the structure of an effect, it's not anything about the trick. The trick means nothing.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. It's just a vehicle.
It's a vehicle.
What I always say whenever I'm pitching a client for a trade show that they're wanting to have magic as a theme. I'm saying, no, you shouldn't be having it necessarily, because then I'm just going to be doing it 1 year. But that way, that if you're saying if it's a vehicle, I just am using this to get people to stop and listen to the product.
If you want, I will tell you something that involved Jimmy Grippo in regards to that story I just told you, if you want. So Jimmy Grippo and myself and the professor were out for dinner. And I asked Jimmy, I said, "You know, you don't do card to wallet, Jimmy. You do card to a sealed envelopes in his coat pocket."
Okay.
He had a bunch of sealed envelopes, and he pulled one out. I said, "I'm just curious why you don't do card to wallet." He said, "Let's say, Howard, that the close-up room holds 35 people."
Mm-hmm.
"And the host makes an announcement that before the next magician comes out, we have a special guest who's going to do one effect that's going to last 5.5 minutes, and then he's going to leave. So if you're all ready, ladies and gentlemen, and the magician comes out, who does card to wallet exactly the way we see it."
Yeah.
Card select, you sign, you pick up the pen, cap it, put it in your pocket, the load and everything. He said, "Then, Howard, what we're going to do is we're going to walk outside the door, and we're going to question all 35 people separately to what they saw."
Yeah.
And he said, "All 35 will say the same thing. The magician shuffled the deck, spread it face down, and I had a free selection of a card, which I signed. It went back into the deck, And immediately the magician cast a shadow over the deck and spread the cards face up. My card was gone. Immediately the magician reached into his coat pocket and took out a sealed envelope, which I opened myself. And inside it, you're not going to believe it, was my signed card. And not one of those 35 people mentioned the wallet. They mentioned the moment. The moment is tearing that envelope open and seeing their signed card.
Yeah.
Am I against card to wallet? No. I love card to wallet. But I understood Jimmy's thinking because he also listened to the professor.
Right.
And that's why he never did card to wallet. He did card to sealed envelope. Because they don't remember.
Yeah, whether the envelope was in the wallet or zipped or whatever.
The beginning, yeah. The middle, the end. They
That's
just
right.
remember that moment. That moment is tearing that envelope open themselves and finding their signed card inside. So that's I share that with you.
That's a good point over there then, too. Bill, you had then worked at Hollywood Magic. I was going to ask you about some stories, perhaps, of some interesting characters or people that might have come in or something that happened that surely have to have some amazing story or two.
Well, let's see. People that worked there, we had Jonathan Neal Brown and
Earl Nelson,
Ray Pierce, Michael Skinner, George Tovar,
Jules Lanier
was there. Shudagawa hangs out, or used to hang out there when he first came to town.
And,
so I kind of helped him out a little bit along the way. Skinner showed me Ring on Stick, his very famous Ring on Stick, which I open my close-up show here with when I do it. He had the great Earl Nelson standing in the back of the store, and he'd always be shuffling his cards. He'd be sitting there shuffle, and I remember this couple came in and stood in front of the counter, and Earl was looking down at his cards and shuffle. This went on for 5 minutes. And finally they go, can you help me, sir? Can you help me, sir? And he looked up and he goes, can't you see I'm shuffling? And looked back down at the cards and he didn't do anything. He just kept doing that, which is great, which is sort of funny. Jonathan and Ray Pierce used to play a lot of fun and games there. Jonathan, just one of the great magicians that I know, but Ray Pierce would lay on the floor. And they would have one of those Buddha screens on it.
Yeah.
And he'd have more crap down there than you could, like 40 feet of silks tied together and 500 canes. And Jonathan would do all the stuff in the equipment and show it empty. And Ray would be passing all this stuff up there. And all this crap is just coming out of this Buddha temple screen. And, 40 feet of silk. And these people are like, what the hell is going on? Where is all this crap coming from?
He's behind the counter, laying on his back.
He's behind the counter because there was counters and servants. You couldn't see anything that was going on there. Another funny thing is we had servants all the way around so we could dump things and load.
Right.
And we had a manager there named Jeff Thomas, a really nice guy, but he did everything by the book. You mean he'd learned Di Vernon's patter word for word. After listening to this for 5 years, you kind of get a little jaded and you don't want to hear that anymore. And so he would do the loads for the cups and balls out of these servants. But we were just so tired of hearing that 5-6 times a day. I found load balls that were slightly bigger than the cups. And I put them down there. And he's like, trying to load these balls back there. And he looks at me and goes, no. And it was just a really great, great thing. All the great magicians used to come into that store,
I've heard Johnny Carson had come in a time or two.
Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris, when he was a young kid, came in.
Muhammad.
I was Muhammad Ali's magician. He would come in.
He loved it.
And he would come to my counter. And like I said, I did the Skinner Ring on Stick. And so I would do it for Muhammad Ali, and you do the thing, and with your left hand, put it on this side of the stick. He covered the entire stick. There was, you couldn't put a right hand anywhere. I mean, his hands were just huge. These hands. We also had thumb tips that were twice the size of a cigar that we kept just for him, so he could do dainty silk to this thing that was like 4 inches in diameter. But he loved. loved it, and he would always come in. Another interesting story is one day a guy comes in the store, and he has a whole Michael Jackson mask and the whole thing on, and he's looking through the magic books, and Jeff Thomas, the manager, starts riling him. He says, "Wow, you really look like Michael Jackson," and the other guys all got in and start really teasing Michael Jackson. And he took his mask off. It was Michael Jackson. That's the way he would disguise himself.
Yeah.
No one would think that Michael Jackson would have a Michael Jackson mask on.
Yeah.
And so he pushed some button, some Bentley came up, and off he went. You know, it was pretty great stuff. But we always had we had a lot of fun in there. We always got to work on lots of routines and stuff together. Trying to think of we also did the dancing cane, but we'd have someone on the ground, right? So you'd do the, you know, this, and all of a sudden you're doing this, and the cane's over here doing it.
That's funny.
And just a lot of stuff like that. I also remember that Jonathan and Ray would end up selling a lot of apparatus type man, dove pans and cylinders and all that sort of stuff. The people would come in and they were going to perform on amateur night, which was Monday night down here in the castle. So this guy, I mean, he bought maybe 20 items with the tables. So the curtains down there, there's like all these, a different table with a different piece of apparatus all set up on the stage. Well, that's ridiculous. You don't do that. So Vernon was in enjoying this enormously. So the guy comes out, and you see all these tables and dove pans and all that stuff, and he goes, "Obviously a serious student of the arts." The guy felt like crawling under a rock. I mean, just a lot of craziness with everything that went on.
Those great days.
They're great days.
And so Noel and I have gotten together recently, and that's what we do. We just sit here and...
We come up with some great magic.
Yeah, yeah. We come up with some good stuff. We bounce ideas off each other. And in those days, when the professor was around, and Charlie and Larry and Bruce and all these fellas, we would sit there for hours and hours without a deck of cards in our hand or coins and just talk.
You know, that's very important, too. I recall so many hours I've spent with Roger Clowes, and people would say, you know, surely he learned a lot. Well, he was a mentor of mine as well as a good friend. But hours would go by until it's almost dawn, and we haven't picked up a deck of cards, but we've just been talking, telling jokes.
Right.
It's not necessarily talking about theory, either. It's not just about how the kid's doing or whatever, but it's just... getting to know each other, you know.
Right.
It's just, you know what I'm talking about, exactly what you guys have been doing.
Roger's had a great story with Skinner.
Yeah, they're great friends.
Well, the first time they met, Skinner was working at Hollywood Magic. So Klaus comes in, he knows who Skinner is. Skinner doesn't know who Roger Klaus is. And Klaus comes up to Michael and says, "You know, I'd like to buy a Pharaoh shuffle." And Skinner goes, "Sir, you can't buy a Pharaoh shuffle." No, he said, "I really want a Pharaoh shuffle, and can you sell me one?" And Michael, being the consummate gentleman he was, "Well, let me just tell you what this is so you know what's going on." And Klaus just kept pulling his chain. He goes, "Well, maybe I can buy a book. Right? There's some books up there. Who's this this Roger Clause guy up here?" And so finally Skinner looks at it and goes, "You son of a bitch." And realized he was pulling his chain, and they were friends ever since then.
Yeah.
And Skinner actually told that story pretty well.
I hadn't heard that one.
He said, "I want to buy a Pharaoh shirt."
You know, the professor had many expressions that I always heard him say. One of his favorite ones was, "If you ever want to keep anything a secret in magic, put it in print."
Well, I heard Jay Marshall, I thought it was one who had said that.
Well, no,
I moved out here.
This gentleman right here.
What?
I've worked in four magic stores.
Yeah.
I worked for Jay Marshall at Magic Inc. in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago, okay.
And he gave me my first job behind the counter. And I remember one day Jay, when it was raining and snowing and no one was in the shop, Jay actually did 30-minute routine with a broom, and he killed with it. I mean, he just was enormously talented, but, you know, lefty, the puppet, and all that sort of stuff. But that's where that famous flash paper story took place, was in that store. Now, I thought it was Senator Crandall that did this. It wasn't. There's somebody, I can't remember the actual guy. But the guy comes walking in, and the manager is actually, he's got the flash paper drawer open, and he's selling flash paper to this guy.
Yeah.
And this guy behind him is smoking a cigar, Senator Crandall.
Okay.
And he's doing this, and the sparks are flying, and one of the sparks goes up in the air and lands in this flash paper drawer, and the thing goes whoosh, and Jay Marshall is standing there.
Yeah.
And he looks at Senator Crandall and goes, "Senator, you're going to have to pay for that flash paper." And Crandall goes, "What flash paper?"
Yeah.
I'm not sure it was Crandall.
It was. It was.
But it's like Senator Crandall to do something like that.
This is funny you bring up Senator Crandall. I'll tell this story. We're up on the third floor of the library, and it was Senator Crandall, Ray Grismer, myself, Larry Jennings, and the professor.
Were you playing poker up there?
No, we normally we have our hearts game, but we were just having just sitting around talking.
Yeah.
And Larry Jennings asked the professor, Larry Jennings asked Senator Crandall, said, "Senator, can you do your dice stacking routine?" Because he did a beautiful dice stacking routine.
We actually sold it.
So the cover was removed from the table, and it was just a bare table.
Right, yeah,
here.
It's got to be a slick table, right?
Right. And unbeknownst to us, if you can just hold this for a second, Larry had a die in his hand.
Okay.
We didn't know this.
He had an extra, okay.
He had a die in his hand. And Crandall brings out his cup and his bunch of dice, and he starts working them on the table. And when the cup stopped, you heard. Now, Larry had dropped the die, but he had it hidden
under his hand.
And so the Crandall thought he blew it, and he tried to do the dicing again. And the cup comes to a stop, and you hear. He did that twice to him. So it was hysterical.
Well, in that same vein, when Charlie Miller visited Jay in Magic Inc., I guess Charlie had just gotten these really beautiful cups. And so Jay looked at him and goes, "Yep, those are really great." And he tossed them behind his head. And Charlie about died. He said he put dents in them. Jay just goes, "Well, those are really nice." But that's the way they were back then. They played a lot of jokes. And getting back to Klaus, I think it was Cornelius that told me when he met Roger Klaus that he had a deck of cards, and they met on some bridge. I think it was down in Texas somewhere. And Klaus looked at him and says, "Well, show me your cards." And he took the cards and he threw them over the bridge in the river. And he says, "You never use cards like that. Thanks. See you later." And it took off. John remembered that. I mean, he was using some unusual brand. He says, "Just, you know, use better cards than that." Just threw over.
This is John Cornelius?
Yeah. John told me that.
I'll tell you a John Cornelius story.
Okay.
You're getting a lot of stories.
Now, the professor lived right down the street from the castle, 1765 Orange. And and John Cornelius was to be visiting the professor, and right down the street is Hollywood Boulevard, and there's the Roosevelt Hotel, and that's where the shuttle comes in from the airport. Well, the professor walked down the street, it's like a half a block, and he met John. They helped him with his bag, and they walked back to his apartment. It was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Was going to stay with the professor. Well, when they got there, the professor's apartment door was wide open. And John says, "Hey, don't go in there. There could be somebody in there." And the professor stuck his head in. He said, "No, nothing seems to be disturbed." He says, he started to walk in. And John says, "Well, it's that lousy lock you have on that door." You know, Vernon got all upset. That's a Master 3. It's the best money can buy. He says, John says, go in there and close the door, and I'll stay outside. And so he went in, and Vernon heard this from the outside, and the door opened. And John's standing there with a bobby pin in his hand. He said, see, that's a cheap lock, Professor. He says, you got lucky. And the professor closed the door again, and he hears this noise, and the door opens, and he's sitting there with a bobby pin. Well, what Cornelius didn't tell Verna was he was a guest of his the year before and never returned the key. So he was just standing there with a bobby pin.
Yeah, he did some wild stuff. He did that muscle pass through the glass. But the best one that he pulled that I remember was, you know, he's known for the Fism Flash.
Right. So what also the Vanishing Nickel, which was the thing that...
The Fickle Nickel.
Fickle Nickel that Doug Henning opened.
Which is great, you know. Yeah. But the Fism Flash was really funny. Now, this is a time when all the traffic signals had the cameras on them. Well, he'd be driving somebody would drive him from the airport or something, and they'd make a right turn, and he'd go click, with the Fism go off, and he goes, wow, I hope you're not going to get a ticket. he made the person think that he made some illegal right turn or something, and because those things are really good. If something happens, you let me know, about that ticket, you know. Which is, that's the funniest use of a Fism Flash that I've ever heard of, you know. But we had, let's see, what other places do we have? Well, we had West Magic, which was Eddie Fields. You know, there's all the Eddie Fields stuff.
Felix's.
That's Tim Felix's place, Midwest Magic.
Right. Yeah, I worked there for a while.
Tim's a great guy.
He is a great guy, and that's a great store, too.
Yeah. Well, Eddie Fields used to come in there and sit in front of my station. And
I know there's so many stories about him that there's a book written about them all.
Well, but I mean, I took care of him, so for that last year. And there's two of them that are sort of funny, is the way Eddie told them. And I actually asked Marlo's wife about this, and I guess Eb was up for like 3 days trying to figure this friggin' thing out. So Marlo wanted to learn everything about everything, and Eddie knew a lot about sort of arcane arts, you know, palm reading and astrology and all that sort of stuff. So Marlo wanted to learn how to do palm reading. So they agreed to meet at the Copper Kettle in Chicago, because that way they could be in private. Because when Marlo went anywhere, there's this like retinue of, you know, Bannon and Rocker Bomber and just all these guys that follow him around. So for 3 months, once a week, Eddie Fields and Marlo meet, and he's saying, you know, this means this, and he's holding his and doing all that sort of shit. And then finally, Eddie goes to Marlo. He says, there's one more thing, but I'm not going to teach it to you, but I'm going to do it for you. Mr. Marlo, take your deck, shuffle your deck thoroughly. And this is with my back turned. Remove any card, put it to your forehead, look at it, repeat the name 3 times, put it into the deck, shuffle it, put it into the box, and tell me to turn around. And so that's what Marlo did. Fields takes the box and says, I'll be back in about 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, here comes Eddie, the card's fam, with the card sticking out. Ed, name your card, he turns around, and there's the card. Now, Marlo is just, like, dying. I mean, how is this possible? So he does this 2 more times, and Marlo is just going ape, because he didn't do card things for him and not explain it, and Eddie wouldn't explain what he did. And Marlo went to his grave never knowing how this worked. Fields was a shyster. Fields went to the Copper Kettle for a reason. It was the time when they initiated doing those blacklight stamps.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like for clubs.
During that entire time, Fields was setting Marlo up and daubing Marlo's fingers with blacklight ink. So Marlo daubed the card himself and puts it in here. Eddie goes to the bathroom, removes the bulb, puts a blacklight bulb, and he's looking for the thumbprint.
Yeah.
And then he fanned the deck and popped the thing up, and Marlo never knew that, you know, when he came back. So that's part of the story. Now, hi, Phil. The other one that's, I think, hysterical, and this one, it's a great story. Whether all of this is true or not, I can't verify.
But it makes for a good story.
But it makes for a good
story.
Yeah,
don't story. Let the truth get in the way.
But Eddie told me that in the very, very early 40s, when he was a young boy, he went back east, and he used the word Annamon, whether it was Annamon, I don't know, and met with Annamon. And Eddie did mental type stuff, you know. And so they were talking, and Annamon asked Eddie, what's your favorite card? And he said, the Six of Hearts. And this is before cell phones or any of that sort of stuff. So he said, well, let's go eat. And they go and to a restaurant and eat, and they're talking, and Annamon says, oh, by the way, what was that card that you liked so much? He said, the Six of Hearts. And he goes, you mean like that big one painted on the ceiling? And he looks up, and here's this big friggin' Six of Hearts painted on the ceiling over his head. And Fields is just like, what is going on here? He's a young boy. You can imagine that just freak you out.
And so
they go back, and I guess he spent a couple more days with him, and his curiosity just gets the best of him. And he says, you got to tell me. How on earth did that Six of Hearts get above my head? And Annamon said, he said, well, did that really fool you? And he goes, yeah. And he says, well, I'm known for indexes. That's how we choose the restaurant. I have 52 restaurants we go to. And whatever card you name, that's the restaurant.
Do we go to?
Do we go to, yeah. So that's the Eddie Fields index. Yeah.
52 restaurants, wow.
Somewhere in Manhattan or something. Yeah. I don't know exactly. It was somewhere there in New
York.
Pick a restaurant. But that's the way Adam picked the restaurant. I thought that was extremely clever.
That's a good idea, actually. You know, there's got to be 52 Starbucks around Houston. I could probably...
Oh, well, I mean, if you've worked in a magic shop, you index every card around the store.
Yeah.
And you learned a lot. And if somebody says Six of Hearts, and you go... You know,
it's on that shelf, yeah.
I was just reading this Marlowe book about page 48, and, you know, that's the exact card that I put there as a bookmark this morning. You know, you do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that sort of gained you a reputation. It's like cloud busting. You ever do cloud busting? You're a mentalist. You know cloud busting, right?
Mm-hmm.
You ever do the cloud busting? We used to stand outside Tim Felix's store because in Chicago you had clouds.
Right.
Sure.
And you'd take them out there and you go, point to a cloud. You go, in 5 minutes that cloud will disappear.
Right.
And you go, you might think that that's a small feat, but remember, that cloud's the size of a shopping center. These people would stare at that thing in 5 minutes, the damn thing. They think you're a miracle worker. Yeah. You know, was it Bascom Jones that did the, what was the magazine that he
Magic? Bascom Jones did
SOB.
Wasn't Bat?
Out of Oakland, California.
Yeah.
Son of Bat, and
that was the one. Sure, it was basketball. It was the mentalist guy that published those mental.
Well, it was Magic with a K that was out.
Well, I might be mistaken, but I thought it was his.
Anyway, I can't remember who actually did the card bust. But I mean, there's, you know, I can remember Martin Nash, for example, over here at Hollywood Magic. Mm-hmm. He came in.
He was the first one I saw when I came to the castle, and that would have been. I was with Charlie.
Well, he's got a great Martin Nash story, but when he came to Hollywood,
Bruce Servon and Martin Nash were working the close. I'm sorry, go ahead.
When he came to Hollywood Magic, he would come in, and I have a routine that I've been doing for 30 years, and he said, "Well, you're going to show that to me?" And I go, "No, I'm not going to show you the trick because it's mine, you know." He said, "Well, do it with my cards now." That took some guts, but I did it with his cards. At the end, he threw them at me. He literally threw the cards at me. He walked out of the door, and that's the last time I remember. I think 2 weeks later, he died. Now, I can't say he died because I didn't show him the card trick, but he definitely died. I had Leonard Green came in, you know, quite a bit. Tommy Wonder was a very, very good friend, and. He would always bring his British contingents and stuff. I'm going to tell one more story before you get into your Martin Nash.
Yeah, I want to hear Martin Nash.
Because that one's just, that's an ender without any question. Well, and this involves Howard. So there was a guy from a very famous magic shop back east that decided to visit
Hollywood Magic, and he brought three of his compatriots with him, young guys that did all the card flourishes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that was their thing. So they came into the store. They didn't know who I was. No one does really and publish a lot. And they said, "Do you do any magic?" I said, "No, I'm just the janitor." And they said, "Well, let me show you something." Now, this guy that's supposed to be very famous does the worst friggin' sandwich trick I've ever seen in my life. He's picking up breaks in the back, and I'm like, "God, that's really good," you know. And he says, "Well, you're doing anything?" And I go, "Well, I'm working on this little thing called the shift."
Yeah.
And you know, if you do this, sometimes I can make that, you know, come to the top like this, you know, that type. He had not seen that before, which was Lee Asher's Losing Control, a great, great card control. I did that three times, and I thought he was just going to, like, explode. So he goes, "Well, thank you very much, and keep working on that shift." And the three card munchmans that are doing all that sort of crazy are there with them, and they leave. It just so happened that night that Howard was at the castle upstairs across from the palace, and we're sitting there doing what we normally do and talking. So Howard's just shuffling this deck of cards like this. Those munchkins are there, and they're kind of leaning around like, "What's the secret word? What's going on there?" Howard's just shuffling the cards. And so finally they come, they're really close, and Howard in his sort of Mickey Spillane voice kind of goes, "Come here, kids." And so they gather around, and Howard does just a regular wiffle shuffle. And he says, "Kid, that's a false zero shuffle. Don't tell anybody." And the kid goes, "That's the best false zero shuffle I've ever seen." And he runs away to downstairs to tell all these people about this absolutely impossible looking false zero shuffle. And Howard and I are just like, we're falling off our chairs laughing.
Because they'll believe anything.
Because it's a regular shuffle. Anyway, over to you, Howard, with the story of Mr. Vernon Nash.
Well, what happened was Di, myself, Earl Nelson, and the professor, myself.
Steve Freeman?
No, it wasn't. It was myself, Earl Nelson, Ray Grismer, and the professor.
Okay.
Were preceded to see Martin Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting up in the top row, and what had happened was Martin had asked the host, "Make sure you have two people at the table that can table riffle shuffle the cards." So now, ladies and gentlemen, the charming cheat, Martin Nash. And now, Martin just played that character absolutely.
Beautiful.
It was just the best.
Yeah.
Anyhow, he comes out, he takes out a brand new deck, takes off the cellophane, breaks the stamp, spreads them face up, knocks off the ad cards and the jokers. He says to the gentleman on the left, "Can you shuffle?" I said, "Sure." He says, "Take half and shuffle." "What about you, sir? Can you shovel? Take the other half. Now you give him half, you give him back half. Cut, you give him half, you shuffle him." I turn to the professor, I say, "We're going to have a deck switch. There's too much of this crap going on."
Yeah.
You know, they're making confetti out of the damn deck.
It's the only thing you can.
And Martin had a wonderful pocket deck switch. It was really great. So now he tells them, "Okay, now deal down 26 pairs of cards." He turns to one fellow and says, "Now you shuffled once, right?" He says, No, I shuffled three times." "Oh, you didn't cut." "No, I cut three times and I shuffled twice." He says, "Touch a pair, two red sevens." The place explodes. "Touch another pair, two black queens. Two red threes, two black eights." The place is coming unglued. Bill, paintings were coming off the wall.
Yeah.
The noise coming out of that room was incredible. Up to pair 8.
Yeah.
From pair 9 to pair 15, it was...
Yeah.
And from 16 to 25, I've heard more noise in a mortuary. It was...
Yeah, kind of got the point after the first few.
I swear this is true. He turns over the last pair, two red sevens, and snaps his hands together and puts out his arms and says, "What do you think of that?" And I swear, this is what you heard. Vernon had cut wind in his sleep.
He fell asleep.
He fell asleep. And he cut. I swear to God, I'm not
at that moment.
At that moment. You talk about the Vernon touch. Yeah. At that precise moment in time, he let one go. He was sound asleep. And of course, you know, Earl and Bloody were looking at each other. I couldn't even keep us straight.
What do you think of that?
What do you think of that?
Well, no, I think you're right. That probably is an ender right there.
That's an ender right there. Thank you for letting us do this.
The back ender, I think. So to speak. Thank you guys very much. It's a good way to start the week at the castle over here. So, again, that was Newell and also Howard Hamburg from the Magic Castle. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're still at the Magic Castle on Friday night, the 17th. Tomorrow is the swap meet, and I'm in the library right now, so you can tell it's kind of quiet. See, Doc Eason just finished his set over there at the WC Fields Bar, and of course, I'm here now not just with the library, but also the close-up performer of the year and nominated again this year, Bill Goodwin. Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thank you. Congratulations again.
Oh, thanks.
As I was saying, as we met in the street earlier over there, it's like, hey, we worked the same week and you know, that time, and that at least the voters came in and they liked you.
I took what you taught me and look at my
there we go. That's you've done fine,
yes.
Son. And done very well. Now, the library. How long have you been a librarian here?
8.5 years.
Mm-hmm. And what is one of the favorite books that people tend to ask for or look for? Or do you have
They like going for the new DVDs. I guess the one thing that gets looked at a lot, there was a time when this, it doesn't happen anymore, but for the longest time, the Fred Capps version of the Victor 11 card trick with bills, people were always coming in looking for that.
Yeah.
And now it's stopped, but I don't know what's going on. Maybe they saw it a lot performed, and they were like, I got to get that. I got to do that. I don't know.
Yeah. Was that the one that Anthony Brahms had?
Yes, he put
okay.
it out. Exactly.
Yeah, great effect. Yeah, I've used that for years. And so were people performing that a lot here at the castle? And
well, yeah, Caveney performs it, Carney performs it, and maybe some others. Mm-hmm. But they might have seen it here, I don't know. But it was like, for years, people kept on coming and asking for that. Now it's just, I don't know, a new flavor of the month must have come out. I don't
know. So now there are the DVDs. Now the DVDs, do people put on headphones and just watch whatever?
Yeah, we got headphones now. We have new computer systems in the back instead of a DVD player. Mm-hmm. We're digitizing everything so you can go to the station and say you put in a magician, Daryl, and then everything we have of him on video will pop up and you just press the button and it plays for you.
Mm-hmm. And when you have digitized that, is that something that's brought down from the cloud, or did you move it from the DVD to
Yeah, we have to do it computer? Ourselves. And we have a special, right now we have 16 terabytes devoted to it, and that's going to be used up. And we'll need more, because we're going to go through our video vault stuff next.
Wow.
That's all the old performances and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, we don't
those
want anybody
on videotape.
What's that?
That's probably on videotape.
Well, it used to be. We used to have stuff on videotape, 8mm, all these different formats, but CBS some years ago, for free, believe it or not, transferred all of our stuff to DVD for us.
Wow.
Yeah. So
was that just through Milt Larson's contacts and friends?
Exactly. Who set that up? It was right before. It was going on before I became librarian.
Yeah.
But it was what a great thing.
Right. You know. Now, how does that work? I assume that obviously everything's all copyrighted and have all these issues, and so what? How do you get around that, or how is that?
Well, libraries, I think, can go ahead and make a copy of something.
Okay.
Even if you buy something for yourself, I think you can make a copy for yourself, but you can't really use it anymore.
What was the lady's name was that works in here?
Lisa.
So libraries have.
Yeah, I mean, we can go ahead and make a copy for ourselves. And we keep the original. It's not like even when we had VHS, we would make a DVD copy for ourselves to conserve space.
Yeah.
But and everything we have is on a hard drive that doesn't go through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in-house, and no one can tap into it from the outside and get this material. It's all secure within our walls.
Right. And nobody can take it with them. They can only view it here.
Yes, only view things here.
Right.
And the same with the books. Everything's in-house study.
Yeah, so it's not a lending library at all.
No, not at all.
I know that you have to have a lot more books than what I see here.
Well, we have some duplicates in the back. And we also have a room, which you just call the back room, and it's got different articles from magazines or newspapers or promo photos of magicians. Mm-hmm. Or if we have we bind all our magazines, but sometimes we might have, say, 11 of the 12 issues. We're missing one.
Yeah.
So we can't bind it. So those are all in the back room waiting
just
to be...
loose.
Yeah.
Okay, waiting to find that.
Yes, and we have a bunch of that extra stuff back there. And obituaries of magicians, okay, and things like that.
Now, whenever that they had the fire, this was not touched or harmed? Nothing happened at that time 2 years ago?
Yeah, because that was in the main building. We're on the annex, which mm-hmm. is offshoot. Plus, this used to be a parking garage where we're at, and you can still see the pillars here where we used to park through.
Yeah.
And I heard that at one point this was actually designated as an emergency area, that it's so secure that you can come down here and probably feel really safe.
In the case of like a tornado
or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's all just concrete. And on the third floor, where we used to have the library, they were forced to install sprinklers. Mm-hmm. And if it was still up there when the fire happened, the water damage from the sprinklers would have been worse than what the fire
would have been.
Yeah.
Right.
But down here, it's different. I don't think we have to put sprinklers in because of the secure nature of it already.
You know, I've got a couple books from Tony Andruzzi's library, and I think he died in the fire, I believe.
That's
wasn't
right.
it?
I know, or his wife.
His wife did. I think his wife died in the fire, and that's right. Some of the books had completely burned up, but then a few were just fire damaged and went through some estate sale some years later, and I ended up with a couple of them.
Oh.
You can still smell the smoke, and a couple of the pages are kind of singed on it, and
wow.
It has his watermark, and, you know, I mean, his book plate and everything, you know, in there. I think that people certainly need to take care of their collection. For an example, just recently that Claude Crowe died in San Antonio, Texas. And he was a collector of a lot of things, a single guy, and I don't know that he has made any provision for what was going to be happening to whatever, happened. And he really didn't have any heirs either.
Okay.
And those that were distantly related to him, I don't think have any idea what value that the stuff has.
Yeah.
And so as a result, you know, I think people should start to make some plans, you know, for things to donate, like to the library here.
Yeah, and some people do come in saying, okay, Bill, when I go, the library gets it all. So they've already sent it up in advance, so I don't know if we'll have the room.
Do you get that from time to time? I mean, every once in a while I get like a little box of books of someone who has passed on?
Yeah, sometimes people will say, oh, my husband was a magician and he passed on. Can you use these magazines, use these books? And I bring them in.
Yeah. For the most part, magazines don't tend to have a lot of value, do they?
No. I usually just end up giving them away free to the members. I see what we need. You know, if we have a damaged copy of something, I can replace it with a new one.
Yeah.
But then I just give like the magazines away for free,
mm-hmm.
and the members take them.
That's what we do. It seems like at the auctions and flea markets that the club has, the people will bring magazines. At the end of the day, they haven't sold, and so they go either to the dumpster, but if there are some youth there, I'll end up like giving it to the kids or something and say, hey, look, you know, there are a lot of good tricks in here that you guys should learn. Just spend some time, you know, reading through these old magazines.
Good stuff,
you know,
hidden in those things.
Yeah.
We're going to have one box of free magazines tomorrow at the swap meet.
Yeah, okay. And speaking of the swap meet, are you going to be having a table with stuff?
Yeah, the library always has a table. We take over the W.C. Fields bar top. We stand behind the bar, and that's our area for all the swap meets. And I recently got a donation of about 428 DVDs.
Wow.
And I keep up, we don't have. And I was surprised that we didn't have about half of them. So that's a lot of work for me.
Yeah.
But the other half I'm selling tomorrow. And we're just going to sell it for $3 each and try to get rid of them, make a little bit of money for the library fund, but make sure the members get a deal.
Now, in the library fund, is that money spent towards purchasing other collections or new books or things, or are most all of your collection really come from donations?
I do have a budget where I can spend so much a year on new acquisitions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get so many donations that what I want to use the money for is more of those computer stations I was talking about.
Yeah.
We have the three now, but I want to put two more here in this associates area as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have they'll just still DVD players, but eventually they'll all be computers. And I'm going to have to use the money to buy more storage space, because 16 terabytes isn't going to handle it.
That's amazing that you've already used that up and need more over there than for all that. But then, of course, it's graphics intensive, I guess, with all. So how many DVDs would you say that you've got digitized?
Oh, I can actually sort of show you right here. Let me see.
Yeah, you got your computer open.
This is actually the database
right here with
there.
All this, okay.
And if I go to tools.
I said I don't like taking medicine.
Database total, so. Well, it says 3,218 disks.
Well.
Yeah, so about 3,000, because this number is a little bit off depending on how they...
Some of them are dual disks or four to a set or something.
Yeah, they actually say disks, so it depends.
Oh.
If I do this, it'll count as different disks. No one's going to know what this
means. You're pointing
means,
to, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, well, that's a lot.
It's a lot. It just takes a... It's time-consuming, but there's enough on there where I don't have to keep on going at it. You know, there's enough there for members to play with while I can do a stop it and do another... a project, and then come back to this.
That's what I was going to ask about when you work on this. I mean, is this done during the daytime when the library is closed, or is this...
Yeah, I work a lot. Half of my time here at the library is when the doors are closed, so I get a lot of work done.
You work more than 40 hours a week, I
think. It's 40 even.
Okay.
And I used to only work when the doors were open, and it was hard because I'd have to help the members at the same time trying to input the items and things. And now, working with behind closed doors gets so much more work done for the library.
Yeah.
And it's never ending. There's always something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of a Dewey Decimal System? I mean, I see the books all have different labels and everything.
When I say this joke to you, if it was a Dewey Decimal System, we might have mentioned this last time, they'd all have the same number. Magic.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so we do it in categories. Carol Marie, who's in charge of the library committee, she set up the system, and it's by categories, a card category, mentalism category, bibliography, fiction, dice, different categories. And within those categories, they're alphabetical by the author's last name. And there's a system we use called cutter numbers, which is probably too much to explain to everybody. But so we have a little letter for the author, followed by some numbers, and then another letter for the title.
Okay. So is that actually named after a person named Cutter?
I'm not sure. Probably.
Okay,
but
like Dewey, I guess.
Full disclosure, I don't have no degree in library science.
Okay. That was not your major in college.
No, that
wasn't. Well, how did you fall into this, then?
I just knew the last librarian, Gordon Bean, and he suggested when he moved that I should take over the gig. So I came in and had a meeting with the board of directors, and they hired me.
Yeah? I don't blame you. And you don't have an assistant. It's basically just you.
Well, no, I have, Lisa Cousins is our other librarian because I can't work 7 days a week. So she fills out, she works 3 days a week. And I also have John Lovick. He does some work from home for us that in the digitizing. He's working on the vault stuff. He's breaking them apart for us so I can take them up getting on the system.
I see.
So he's doing a lot. And then once in a while we'll have somebody fill in for us. And then we have some volunteers, Carol Marie and Tom Meserol and Alan Hayden.
Well, it's a lot of work. I mean, it doesn't...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice place that people come and relax. And
I get people to do other things. Like, Lisa's taken all of our audio tapes. We got a whole bunch of audio tapes. And she's been digitizing all those, because those will go on the back system, too.
Yeah.
And we want to preserve those, because... In any type of tape is going to deteriorate.
Eventually, that's true. Well, and before long, of course, something's going to be replacing the digital.
We'll redo this whole thing.
Over, that's right.
And I got one. You're talking about somebody who would give donations based on their ex. But this lady gave me a donation of 31 audio tapes that her husband had taken of Slidini. He took lessons with Slidini, and he taped them all.
Oh.
And so now we have those.
Wow.
And I don't know how valuable they be to other people, but I think its historic value is good.
Sure.
So we'll be digitizing those and trying to preserve those. So you never know what you're going to get.
Speaking of which, that there is a gentleman who has done some one-on-one interviews up in the parlor some years ago. I don't know, maybe they still do that. And those were on video, I think, also. You know who I'm talking about?
Peter Pitt did a bunch.
Yeah, Peter did for a long time, but then I thought somebody else recently has been continuing that, no?
Oh, for a short time, Rich Calley would interview some of the acts that were coming up.
Yeah.
And he'd give little 3 or 4 minute clips.
Okay.
And he stopped doing that, but I have them all on the system. You can
That's
go and watch them.
Yeah. Okay, so you got Peter Pitt on those.
And we have Peter Pitt on the back in the vault stuff. I haven't got it digitized yet, but we have those.
Because I think those would be kind of interesting also.
They really are.
Hearing the people you talk to, but Peter also.
Yeah. I was talking to Mark Wilson about it, and I think Mark Wilson, out of all those people that Peter interviewed, Mark's the last one alive, I think. So
I just saw him and Nani outside.
They were here tonight. But so it's great to know that you can see Susie Wondell Bennett being interviewed or Jack McMillan being interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
People you hear about, but they never really did these interviews.
Right.
So we have them. It's a really great perk of membership to be able to see those.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem.
And I asked you, I think, last year what your magic word is. I don't remember. Do you remember what it was, or do you want to make up a new one? Or your phrase, or, you know, what's important to you? What do you?
Oh, I think I probably said last time, just keep it fun.
Keep it, I think about it.
Say that again.
Thank you, Bill.
Keep it fun.
Okay. He's going to keep it fun. You should, too. Thanks a lot. That's Bill Goodwin. Till next time. Scotty out. Okay, we're back again. During the taped interview that we just did with Bill, I put it on pause for a minute because a lady came in and asked a question and interrupted us for just a moment, so as I paused it. But it was interesting, not necessarily what she was asking about, but who it was that asked. Who was that, Bill, you said?
It was Carol Cardini, Cardini's daughter.
Daughter, yeah, not granddaughter,
I'm pretty sure.
Daughter.
Yeah, I'm pretty, and she had her daughter here. As well.
Here this evening? I mean, at the castle, just as a guest then as well?
Yeah, she tries to bring them down and show off the display, the Cardini display.
As I said, they got a whole display of everything over there now. Does she live here in L.A.?
You know, I'm not sure where she lives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably, but she comes in often enough that you know who she is.
I mean, yes, I've met her a few times before, yeah.
Hmm. Fascinating. Okay, well, just a little extra tip there. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Newell Unford, Howard Hamburg, and Bill Goodwin for being on this week's kickoff from My Week at the Magic Castle. Great stuff there, guys. I'm looking forward to this coming week and what surprises it will bring. And thanks goes out especially to two new friends of the Magic Word who became continuing supporters. Thanks to Daniel Will, who pledged his ongoing support through Patreon.com. Through our subsequent correspondence, I look forward to meeting him later this week as he and his wife plan to come out to the castle and to watch me perform in the close-up room. I thank you also, John Graybill, who sent a couple independent donations in the past but has now become an ongoing sponsor and patron by pledging through Patreon.com. Thank you guys so much for your financial support. It is because of you and many like you who enjoy this podcast enough to make financial pledges and help keep this podcast going. It was never more appreciated than this week when my laptop screen cracked and left me in Los Angeles in a bind. I was afraid that I was not going to be able to post the next week's podcast until I got home to my desktop computer to edit the recordings. But with the ongoing financial support of listeners like you, I bought a new laptop in L.A., and I was able to post this podcast. So, thanks, guys, and thank you, loyal listeners. If you'd like to learn more about how you can join the others by pledging your support, then take a look at patreon.com/themagicword and watch the 3-minute video. Your support really does make a difference. So, until next week with part 2 from My Week at the Magic Castle, stay well, get booked, and experience the moment. This is Scotty out.